Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg, Spike Friedman, and the guy that wrote The Thing You Like, Jackson Bevins of Field Goals. Jackson, thank you for coming on the show today.
Hey, you got it, man. Thanks for having me.
Now, for those unfamiliar with Jackson, which is, you know, hard to imagine if you're a part of Seahawks Twitter, he writes with Field Goals, he does Cigar Thoughts, and you know, he has a lifelong Lakers fan, just like me.
Since July 1st.
What a coincidence. But we're excited to have Jackson on the show. We're going to do a quick intro of the co-host, me and Spike. So I am the co-host of this podcast and do social media and graphic design work for SB Nation's Lakers site. And Spike is a writer at The Stranger. Spike, I know you're looking into headsets to get the best performance out of the technology for this show. So we appreciate your effort and your desire to always compete and get better for us.
Yeah, if I'm not having my headphones compete against each other, am I really worthy of being a co-host of a Seahawks podcast? I'd argue not, so that's where I stand. I actually ordered something right now. It already happened. It's on its way. Get excited.
You know, like Pete always says, they're always looking to make really good additions, and I think that's what Spike just did right now, live on the air. So what we're going to do today is we're going to kind of get a sense of what Jackson thinks of the Seahawks going into the season. We're going to play a quick game in the middle of the show, and then to close, we're going to talk about big storylines heading into the 2018-2019 Seahawks season. So to start, Jackson, just kind of plainly, what do you know? How do you feel about this team going into the season, maybe compared to last year or after this offseason? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, this is probably the first year out of the last six where it's really tough for me to say, and I hope this doesn't come off as too much of a cop-out, but I wouldn't be surprised by anything from 6 to 11 wins. I think Seattle has probably been a top five roster each of the last 6 years. I think now we're talking about, you know, we're probably looking at a 6 or 7 win roster with a 12 win quarterback. And so I think they kind of end up somewhere in there. But, you know, I gun to my head, probably looking at 9 wins this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, we've seen the Seahawks, you know, they've started at, you know, 10 wins and 11 wins, and they've gotten better every year. Then they've slowly started to the win count has kind of decreased. But, you know, when you have Russell Wilson and such key parts of the team still hoping and praying Earl Thomas comes back, there's a lot of talent on this team still, but there's a lot of gaps and holes that need to be filled. But I think, yeah, best case scenario, I can see them, you know, getting 11 wins. You know, worst case, I'm a little higher, I guess. Maybe 7 or 8 wins is there
Hold
floor
on,
for
is
me.
That 8 with Earl? Is that with Earl, worst case scenario?
Oh, with Earl. That's with Earl, yeah, I'd say 8 wins, worst case scenario.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with that. I'm probably a little more bearish than that, but I hope you're right. And the thing is like, you know, can we just talk about Earl for a second?
Yes, please. Of course. Please.
So here's my thing. You know, a lot of Seahawks fans, and you see the Twitter polls and whatever, it's like a third are just like, screw Earl, get him out of here, you know, on to the next one. And I'm just like, man, did you forget about the last 7 years, not only of all-world free safety play, but they're forgetting about, I think, the other half of the equation, which is what kind of defense do you run without Earl Thomas? Because I promise you, you're not running single high, cover 3, kick step defense like they have. We've seen what that looks like without Earl.
And it's, yeah,
it's not only not great, it is borderline bad.
Yeah, no, we saw what happens when they try to play the same style of defense without Earl Thomas, and teams, you know, I think they try to run up the score against the Seahawks because they've been able to do it, you know, so few times. So yeah, you're not doing the same thing with Tedrick Thompson or any person stepping in for Earl. And like I said, I'm hoping Earl gets back as soon as possible. But you know, he needs his money. He needs to be paid.
Right.
Well, look.
Know that during that answer, I just sunk a 33-foot putt. That's
Woo! Jackson, coming to you live. What course are you at?
I'm playing the Bellingham Golf and Country Club right now.
Oh, hey, out in Kitsap County. Gun to your head. I'm sorry. I was thinking Bremerton. Okay.
No, I'm all the way up in Bellingham.
You're north. Oh boy. You're basically in Canada. Yeah.
Yes.
So, gun to your head. Do you think Earl comes back? Like, I mean, the tea leaves are almost impossible to read. So I realize you're just guessing. But do you think this team goes into the season without Earl Thomas? Do you think he misses games and then comes back, or do you think they move on from him?
You know, as much as I don't blame Earl for the holdout, because it's really kind of the only leverage a player has, the Seahawks are straight up calling his bluff. And honestly, if you're not going to sign him to the extension, which I think they should, you know, I would be doing the same thing as Seattle. And I've been saying that this holdout doesn't start to concern me until after the third preseason game. You know, when it's really like, okay, we need to really start thinking about a season or even some games that exist without Earl Thomas. And you go back, the template is Cam Chancellor. And Cam was banking on, you know what, they're going to need me so much after I miss a couple of games. They're going to give me the contract and then I'll be back. Well, they went 0-2. And still didn't give Cam the money he wanted. And he kind of had to limp back, tail between his legs. And sure enough, they were a lot better with Cam. But Cam knew that, okay, now he can't posture for the new contract anymore. He has to play for the new contract. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be the same thing for Earl. So I don't think missing any games is going to help his leverage in the eyes of the Seahawks. I think it's just going to make it worse for him. So I'm hoping he gets back. And, you know, as much as I love Earl, he was pretty critical of Cam during that holdout. So, you know, I think at this point he's just got to say, you know what, the way I'm going to get that extension is by balling out this year, and the quicker he gets back, the better chance he has of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping you're right. It's that strange thing, though, where he's going into the last year of a deal. They've renegotiated deals in this case so many times before this. Why do you think it is that they aren't now? Is it just where the team is as a whole, or is it something specific to Earl?
I don't know. And I am a firm believer that you should fight the gambler's fallacy, which essentially is saying, you know, well, things have gone wrong in the past, so you know they're kind of due to correct themselves, and to the Seahawks credit, that's what they're doing. Things have gone wrong with the, you know, the third contracts to Bennett and to Chancellor and all of that, and they may just be saying, you know, that's not who we are. We're just not gonna pay guys top of their position money on a third contract. But I also believe Earl's the rare player that rules don't apply to. And you know, free safety, so let's say, what's it take to get him in? 3 years, $40 million, 42, making the highest paid safety. To me, that's worthwhile just because the drop-off is so big. But they also, they don't know. For the first time in half a decade, they don't know who half their starters are. And they don't know who's going to be worth that second contract. You know, they got some decisions coming up with Frank Clark and Tyler Lockett, and depending on how they play. So, I mean, they got to get Russell's world-ending contract is coming up. So I get where they're coming from. I still think the prudent play is to get Earl for 2-3 more years. I mean, we've seen great Hall of Fame safeties play well into their 30s. Earl's, I think, 29 right now. But, you know, I guess to put it simply, I see where Seattle's coming from. I just wish they were coming from somewhere else.
Yeah, it's definitely where I'd say that too. They've learned from their mistakes with the Chancellor contract, but it's also hard to say that they've learned from their mistakes, seeing them, you know, bring on the same offensive line, like the same style offensive linemen, and
right,
bring in just like total prove it players rather than, you know, maybe, you know, drafting a little better. Nice swing. But yeah, I just think that I think that the Seahawks, you know, really need to bring Earl back. And I know it sounds really simple, but, you know, to play their style of defense, to not make widespread change in a defense that's had so much change over the last offseason, I think some continuity is great in that sense, and especially when it's with Earl Thomas.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. So sorry for derailing it, but to get back to your original question, I think with Earl playing a full season, they're probably a full 3 wins better than with him missing. Really, let's be real, he's not going to miss more than 9 games because after that, his contract doesn't toll and he's back in the exact same position next year. So he has to play half the season to become the free agent he wants to be. Worst case scenario is he sits out 8 games, comes back, doesn't get paid, and that probably depresses his value. But I think that he could be the difference between 2 or 3 wins in that 8-game stretch.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. All right, Grant, should we take a quick break and then come back and go over some of the biggest moves that have happened with the Seahawks this offseason?
I think that's a great idea. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with more of the Locked On Seahawks podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're still with Grant, Spike, and Jackson, and we are going to play a little game where we rate the things that have happened in Seattle's offense 1 through 5, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. And since I came up with this, I'm going to take the reins on the first question. And this has been a kind of controversial thing that the Seahawks did. I'm not going to say kind of, because it was. But drafting Rashad Penny in the first round, rate it 1 through 5 and why?
Ooh, that's a good one. God, that's so tough. I think with the Pete Carroll philosophy, the Brian Schottenheimer philosophy, I'm going to say 4. I would say 4 more confidently before the injury, but it doesn't sound like it's so bad. I just think there's so much benefit to having a deep running back core. And I don't mean like a serviceable change of pace guy. I mean like someone that, if you need to, can do everything. And in college, Rashad Penny was able to do everything. He was able to block. He was an incredible runner. I think he has the vision to be the one-cut guy that you need running behind a Mike Solari offensive line, assuming they're doing their jobs. And, I mean, at USC, there was 1 year where Pete Carroll rostered 10 first-team All-State running backs at once. I mean, in his mind, you can't have too many. So if you buy into the philosophy moving forward, I'd say it's a 4. But it's got a potential to be a 2.
Ooh, yeah. This is where, like, I guess I disagree a little bit because granted, you don't know what you're going to get with Chris Carson coming back in March. So, like, yeah, that's more of a wait-and-see thing, but I think yep. that he could have been had for a little bit of a price, and that's the biggest issue that I take with it, and I think Spike agrees in that sense. But I think, to sidetrack a little bit, Penny's injury is big for CJ ProSize. I think that they're gonna give him as many reps as they can without, you know, forcing the issue with his hip. But he was a full participant in practice, and it looks like he's gonna play on Saturday. So, you know, I'm really hoping that he, you know, returns to form and we get, you know, some of the dynamic player that we saw in those couple games where he really impressed.
Boy, I'm hoping so. A healthy CJ ProSize is, I mean, he can change the trajectory of a team season. We just don't know if his body can hold up to an NFL grind, which is, I mean, that's 99.8% of the population, you know. But
yeah,
to hold up in the NFL, you got to do it at some point.
Well, and I worry about his psychology at this point. He's missed so much time, and every time he gets on the field, he gets hurt. I would love to see him get some preseason action, take some hits, even if it's just getting pushed out of bounds, just so he knows his body can bounce back from that coming into the season if we're going to be relying on him.
Yeah, I agree.
I think these next 2 preseason games are going to be huge for his career. I mean, he's playing with his NFL career on the line, certainly with the Seahawks career on the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, should I fire off a 1 to 5 ranking?
Go ahead.
All right, let's do it. I'm just going to say the Seahawks 5th round Let's go with that 1-5. That involves Shakim, involves Dixon, involves trading up to get Dixon. How do we feel about the fifth round of the Seahawks?
Is that me again? Because if it is, that's a full five. That's got a chance to be an all-time fifth round right there.
Yup, I'm going to agree. I'm going to put a 5 on the 5 for obvious reasons. It's thrilling. I mean, is there any one of those guys that you're most excited about, Jackson? On the pod, I mentioned I'm a Michael Dixon guy, but Trey Flowers and Shakim and potentially Jamarco Jones is, you know, God only knows how long he's going to be out with that ankle injury, but it's a long-term potential right tackle competitor. I mean, there's just so much there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Shakim Griffin is already my favorite draft pick of all time. maybe the best story in the history of the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And we could do a whole show on that. But Michael Dixon has a chance to change games. I mean, really, he can be worth 60, 70 yards a game. You know, John Ryan, God bless him, he's competing for his career right now and all that. But I was at that Rams debacle, and I don't think his punts would have hit a second-story ceiling. So it's like, okay, it went 45 yards in the air, but coverage is still 15 yards away when the guy starts running. Dixon kicks it. Dudes don't even know how to catch it.
They can't catch it. They cannot catch it. It's unbelievable. I literally do not believe what I'm seeing sometimes. I love the whole round. And Trey Flowers, I mean, he's the forgotten guy. I mean, and he's starting already in our preseason games. Now, hopefully that won't be the case when the regular season rolls around. Just talent, 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 talent. In a way where we haven't hit in the late rounds in years, and in a way that was the hallmark of this team on their Super Bowl run.
And talent at positions of need, too.
Yep.
You know, and that's not typically what you're looking for in the fifth round, but Seattle opened up about 20 roster spots this offseason.
Yeah, I think, and Jackson and I have talked about Trey Flowers. We're on that hype train. Just having a guy with, you know, a mentality, Bradley McDougal was talking about him today in the press conference, and saying that, you know, he never likes to see the offense, you know, the guy he's guarding touch the ball. And so, like, to have a guy that's, I forget who was the quote for, that was pissed off for greatness. But, like, that's what Trey Flowers' mentality, at least from this Bradley McDougal presser, reminds me of. And, like, that's the guy that you want that, you know, is so annoyed by someone else succeeding across from you. That's something you want in a cornerback, and the fact that he's already progressed this much in such a short amount of time, that's great for his trajectory, his potential as a cornerback in the future.
Yes, and defensive back in the modern NFL is a position you just cannot have enough depth at, and whether he starts or not, I see a huge probability of him at least outperforming his draft position.
Yep. Yeah, and you look at how much draft capital the Packers have had to spend there and how much that's constrained their roster over the last couple of years. It's similar to us with the offensive line, where if that's a place where you can end up really chasing your misses in the draft, get yourself in a lot of trouble. And in this, you know, it's a freebie. It's a freebie. And to have that in a year where you've got potentially losing multiple Hall of Famers, it's just a huge deal. It's a huge deal.
Totally agree.
All right, I think we'll do maybe one or two more rankings, and then, okay, so I think we can universally agree that Dwayne Brown's extension is a 5 or at least a 4, but I'm going to go with a different signing from this offseason, and that's Ed Dixon. He's in a tight end room that's pretty competitive right now, but he hasn't been able to compete in practice. Jackson, what do you think about the Ed Dixon signing, and what can he bring to this team that seemingly has pretty good tight end room already?
Yeah, well, I love Jimmy Graham. Love Jimmy Graham. And I love the trade for him, and I would still consider it a net positive. But they tried to make him into something he wasn't. They tried to make him into Zach Miller. Pete Carroll wants Zach Miller, and it didn't work with Jimmy Graham. They should have used him as a wide receiver. His hand never should have been in the dirt. And I think at this point, Ed Dixon represents a guy who is exactly that, a little bit more athletic, Zach Miller. You can trust him with the pass, but he's out there to be your sixth offensive lineman. And you know, he had a couple of good games when he had to fill in for Greg Olsen as a starter. He had a couple of games, you know, 20-point fantasy games, but that had more to do with volume than any great receiving skill. He's there to block, and we haven't had a chance to really see him because he's been hurt in the preseason, but if he blocks the way he has his whole career, I think that, as much as any other move, makes Seattle's running game a lot better.
Now, my concern with Dixon, and you know, you bring up great points, he's known for being a blocker, and he's a capable pass catcher, but I feel like you draft Will Disley for that too, and he really impressed in the first preseason game, excuse me. Granted, it was against the Colts, and it was a few drives, but you know, he really showed, you know, what the Seahawks drafted him for, and you know, to have two guys like that can, you know, be, you know, extra offensive linemen, it's really good for the running game, but I just don't want it to make, you know, to render one of them useless, to have, you know, roster spot and money allocated to somewhere where it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, you know, I think that Will Disley is probably a guy they circled pretty hard in their draft room, but same time, tight end is a really dynamic position at the pro level. You have to be able to do a lot of different things, and you are oftentimes, you're the key for the defense. The defense is making their reads based on where you line up and how you line up, and that's a lot of pressure for a brand new guy. So really, I think Dixon is a short-term hedge, and the second they trust Will Disley, he's the guy.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, last move before taking another quick break. I was going to ask about Earl Thomas, but we already talked about Earl Thomas, so I'm going to audible and go to our offensive coordinator hire, Brian Schottenheimer. Obviously, at the time that it happens, there's a lot of negativity around it, but he's been in the room now. We've seen some of the principles get downloaded from his offense. How are you feeling about that offseason hire on a 1-5 scale?
3, talking myself into a 3.
Yeah.
If it works, great. The quarterbacks that he's worked with in the past speak super highly of him. Andrew Luck's best season was with Schottenheimer. Drew Brees can't say enough good things about him. I think what's going in Schottenheimer's favor is continuity with Pete Carroll's mindset, continuity with Mike Solari, and really concentrating the voice that's in Russell Wilson's ear. In the past, he's had so many different voices, you know, a run game coordinator and an offensive coordinator and all kinds of other stuff that the quarterback shouldn't, I don't think, have to worry about. And so if nothing else, it sharpens all of that to a finer point. There's nothing about his resume that makes you say, yes, this is the guy that's going to take us to the next level. And I was a Bevel defender for a long time, but there's no question Seattle had gotten pretty predictable. And let's be real, your playbook gets real thin when you can't trust your line to consistently block. So, you know, we'll see. Jury's out, but 3 at best as it sits.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. And I think the question with him is that he's been so good as a quarterback's coach and so middling as an offensive coordinator everywhere he's gone. Has he developed as a play caller? Has he developed in terms of really getting his mind around the game writ large so that he can be the guy who frees things up and makes things better as opposed to a guy who can make the quarterback better, but the offense stagnates? So we'll see. They're saying, yeah, I go 2.5 right now. But, like, when the hire happened, I was, like, 1.5, 2. So he's up a little bit in my estimation. But there's still so much to be seen.
Yeah. I'll go,
that's one that's going to take a while.
I'll go 2 with 3 upside. That's where I'm sticking right now.
Okay.
That's all right. So that's the 1-5 scale game, I guess. We're going to take a short break and then come back with the end of the episode. So stay tuned. Listen for more Locked On Seahawks podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Guys, Seahawks season is so close. We're in the preseason now, and we all know the best way to watch a Seahawks game. It's at CenturyLink Field. How are you going to get in? You're not a season ticket holder. Maybe you are. If you are, congratulations. But if not, you're going to need to buy a ticket. And you got a lot of options for where to go, but we're telling you about the best of those options. It's Vivid Seats. They've got great prices for NFL games, all live events, and the reason it's the best option is because we're giving you an opportunity to get 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats when you go to vividseats.com and enter the promo code LOCKEDON. Now, that offer is only going to be good through the end of August, and it's going to make your time at CenturyLink cheaper. Those tickets are expensive.
Super expensive.
Yeah, I mean, look, and you know what's going to be better? Is when you buy them on Vivid Seats. So, guys, do it. Seahawks season's here. See them in person. See Russell Wilson in person. Give him a high five. Give Michael Dixon a high five. Give Bobby Wagner a high five. And do it using the promo code LOCKEDON. Save 10% off your first order, Locked On, and do it before the end of August. Go to vividseats.com. Vivid Seats.
We are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We are finishing this thing out. You are still with Grant, Spike, and Jackson. And we are going to dive into what could be, you know, some of the bigger storylines around the Seahawks this year. Just for an example, I'll start. I think that the performance of the receiving group is going to be huge for the Seahawks and their success, with such an emphasis being put on the running game. Having guys step up, a guy like Brandon Marshall, you know, redeeming himself for the past couple seasons, injury-filled seasons. And so I think, you know, getting contributions from him and Jerron Brown would be huge for the Seahawks offense to stretch the field. And so now that I've kind of set the precedent, Jackson, what do you think is a bigger storyline, or what's your storyline that you're watching throughout the season?
The passing of the torch to Bobby Wagner as the leader of the defense, and honestly, maybe even the de facto leader of the team. I mean, there's no question Russell Wilson's the most important player, and for most of the last decade, Earl Thomas has been 1A. But it's Bobby's team now, and I think that the difference between Bobby and Russ is, you know, Russ is this animatronic, half-human, half-robotic guy that says the right things and does the right things and that you can count on 100 times out of 100. But like, how do you hang out with Russell Wilson? Right? Where, and this is a brotherhood. They spend 8 months of the year, just their livelihoods are dependent on each other, and they spend so much time, and Bobby Wagner is that dude. And he's been really vocal about it's my time now. I'm going to lead this defense. I mean, and he's got the talent. He's a consistent Defensive Player of the Year candidate. And I'll be really curious to see how the defense adapts around their best player now being smack dab in the middle as their middle linebacker, as opposed to a bunch of Hall of Famers in the secondary with great pass rushers.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I mean, you just look at that defense that's lost so much, not just talent, but leadership and loud voices in that locker room, watching the defense, seeing if it really can coalesce around Wagner's version of leadership. I think that is the upside for this team on the defensive side of the ball, is that he really does take that mantle. And we saw that he's probably the best player on the defense right now. It's certainly 1A, 1B with Earl. And that if he can become that single leader, I think you're right that that is a version of this season that I really want to see.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bobby Wagner is... you made a great point about hanging out with Russell Wilson. I would love to hang out with Bobby Wagner. Like, he's just a cool guy. He loves Ninja Turtles. He's, like, cool with TDE. He's a big Laker fan, so... You know, me and him, I feel like it's two peas in a pod. Like, I'm just saying, if anybody, you know, that knows Bobby Wagner knows, you know, who he likes to hang out with, you know, throw my name in that conversation. I don't think there's going to be a lot of disappointment right there.
Right.
Oh, man, I have to do a podcast multiple times a week with this Lakers fan. It's tough, man. It's tough.
Granted, I don't bring up LeBron as much as you bring up Michael Dixon. I don't know if I should.
That's fair. I mean, but is LeBron the caliber of athlete that Michael Dixon is? That's a big question that we still have.
I think the better question is, who has a bigger impact on the game?
Yeah, I don't know.
who do you build a team around, just universally in sports? Michael Dixon or LeBron James? You know, it remains to be seen.
Jury's out.
Jury is out.
All right, so I think that does it for today's show. We want to thank Jackson for coming on. in the middle of a round of golf, just a gutsy performance, great effort. Jackson, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, dude, this is a blast. Thank you so much, guys.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, hopefully we didn't mess up your handicap too much.
No, honestly, I'm playing better than I normally do. So I'm going to need you guys to rope me in every time I hit the links.
All right, just let us know. And we want to thank you guys, the listeners, for listening all the way through the episode and for going to iTunes, leaving 5-star ratings, 5-star reviews. It's always appreciated. Let us know when you do that. Or let us know any thoughts that you have on the show, whether that be through a review or Twitter. It's always appreciated. And thank you for taking the time to listen to us, of all people, talk.
Yep. Two things before we wrap. There's going to be a Facebook page soon. If you're still on Facebook, get on Facebook. People love it. It's the social network from the movie. Made Mark Zuckerberg $1 billion, I heard. And then the other thing is Locked On NFL. Listen to it. It's a great podcast. They get great guests on there. It covers the whole NFL if you want a broader picture for something from the Locked On Network.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. So, thank you guys. And for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.